Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser. You were just listening to a small clip of a song called Alone in the Trenches by Asera Tuwalo. He also wrote a book by that title. He was an NFL football player that came out after retiring from the NFL, and he's gone on to be a speaker and, you know, telling his story. And he got a lot of support from an organization called PFLAG, as well as HRC. And we have guests today that are from those organizations. First up is my dear friend Jill Aul, A-U-L. She is from Missouri, and she is a PFLAG mom. And she's going to tell us a little bit about what that PFLAG acronym stands for and her story. But I used to do a lot of work with PFLAG back in the early 90s, and I have met the most incredible people, moms, dads, brothers, sisters, and friends of the gay and lesbian community. And they originally started in Colorado, and it was started by one mom who just stood up for her son. And whenever PFLAG is in parades around the country, because they are in every state of the United States, they get a huge round of applause, standing ovations, because they're all about love, and they're all about telling and sharing their story. So welcome, Jill. How are you?
Thank you, Brenda. Fine. I'm very happy to be here today. Thank you.
Well, happy spring, and I'm glad you could be with us and share a little bit about your personal story and then the wonderful work that PFLAG's doing on the local level here in Missouri and how people can connect with it in their communities. So first, tell us your story. How did you find PFLAG, or how did you seek it out?
Sure. Well, my husband Bill and I have two children, and back in about 2001, when our daughter Emily was a freshman in high school, she came out to us as a lesbian. Throughout the rest of her high school years, she had very little support. She had some friends, but at the time there were no gay straight alliance clubs in high schools around this area, and fortunately they were connected with a youth group in town called Growing American Youth. And through her involvement there, she learned about a parent support group organization called PFLAG. I had not heard of it ever at that point, but thanks to that youth group, we learned that there is this national support group. PFLAG is an acronym that stands for Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. It was formed in 1972, as you said, by one supportive mom named Jean Manford, who passed away just a couple of years ago. Because she stood up for her gay son, other parents were attracted to that and wanted to support their children as well. She started just gathering a group of friends in her basement. The group grew in size and eventually has mushroomed to the point now where we are the largest grassroots organization of its kind. We have more than 350 chapters that meet in all 50 states and boast a membership of over 200,000 people.
Wow, so, it's really grown.
Yeah, it's really grown.
So fast forward to
2005, by the time our child was in college, we knew that she had quite a few friendships with LGBT peers who were in not only the St. Louis area, but out here in St. Charles County, which is the county that's just west of St. Louis. And we knew that her friends had parents who probably had the same questions and wanted to have the same support system that we did. At the time, there was one chapter of PFLAG in the entire metro area that was meeting in St. Louis County. So we decided to go ahead and form a chapter here in St. Charles. So that's what happened.
Okay. So what are some of the issues that a parent faces when they find out that their son or daughter may be gay or lesbian or transgender or questioning? What are some of the things that a parent goes through?
Well, the first thing, you know, it really is a grieving process because usually from conception, we start wondering about our child's gender and what kind of path their life will take. And nearly all loving parents envision a life, you know, that may be similar to their own, where their child will grow up and fall in love with someone of the opposite gender and get married and have children, and that's just kind of our circle of life. So when a child comes out, usually a generation ago it was around age 30. Now the average age of coming out is around 15. But when that happens, very often the parents go through a cycle of grief because the child that they thought they knew and the future that they thought their child was going to have is no longer. So we like to say that when the kids come out of the closet, very often the parents go into the closet. It can be a very isolating experience. We feel very alone. We have lots and lots of questions. Very often there's a huge need for education because this may not have been on the parents' radar ever, and there's just a whole world out there that they know nothing about, and it can be frightening. So, you know, by getting together and supporting one another and sharing these questions and just bouncing off of each other's experiences, it can really do a world of good. So, you know, really,
and
first and foremost, PFLAG is about support. It's also about education. It's also about advocacy. But our St. Charles chapter really is first and foremost all about support for one another.
So it starts out that a parent may seek PFLAG for support. They gain understanding of the issue. I think a big issue for some parents is the feeling of guilt. What did I do wrong? Or could I have done something differently? And then they come to realize that no, their child, whether it's their eye color or their hair color or their sexual orientation, is just a gift of who they are and their personality and their and so through that education about the issue, I suppose you also make friends and then I know PFLAG has played a big role with a lot of faith-based groups and educating church leadership and just their own community-based church or religious organization about acceptance. How has that played out in your life?
Well, you know, I have to say in the past 9 years since we've been in existence, usually the number one issue for people is church-related and Bible-related because, you know, here in the center part of the United States, it's referred to as the Bible Belt. And nearly all of the people who come to our meetings have a huge issue with what they've been taught in various churches around the area. You know, they're really conflicted very often. We've had members who have left their church and to find a more welcoming congregation to join. A lot of people feel disenfranchised with their religion, you know, with their churches, and that is huge, probably the number one problem and issue. But there's a lot of hope because more and more people are becoming more enlightened, more educated, and much more accepting and tolerant. And I'm happy to say that all over the St. Louis and the St. Charles area, there are many welcoming congregations, and people are really coming around, you know, from Pope Francis to all the way on down through many different religious organizations. So that's a really hopeful thing for the future, and it's definitely a very real issue for most people.
And I think the more that people talk about it, the more that friends and family members kind of share that they have a gay family member. I mean, I know at our church, the Center for Spiritual Living, been going there 9 years, and, you know, everyone knew pretty much. But last year when I started talking a little bit more about the issue and about non-discrimination in the workplace and how people can still get fired from their jobs here in Missouri, or asked to leave restaurants, or just some crazy discrimination that's still on the books that has not yet been, those laws have not been changed yet in Missouri, people started basically coming out of the woodwork, and people I'd known for 8-9 years came up to me and said, oh, my son's gay, or my friend, my sister. One lady came up to me, this little old lady, and said, oh, my granddaughter is transgender, and you know, and it was amazing to me how many people either know someone in their family or have a friend or a neighbor or something, and I think it's a lot more prevalent, and it seems that the populace, at least here in Missouri, are far ahead of where their state legislators are, and you know, you were talking about how the People Like chapter started here 9 years ago, when it's been around for 42 years. So that right there shows that Missouri is about 30 years behind the time clock of these kinds of issues getting accepted and discussed. And so what kind of work have you done with advocacy in terms of helping to educate state legislature about the need for example, safe schools?
Well, we have had contingents from PFLAG speak at numerous organizations, businesses, churches, educational groups all around the area. We've traveled to Jefferson City for Lobby Day several times in past recent years. I'd like to remind everybody that the St. Louis chapter of PFLAG has been in existence for probably 30 years.
Oh, great.
Yeah, but now in the metro area now, there are three chapters. There's another one in Belleville, Illinois, that has formed since we formed our chapter. Yeah, and we're helping to launch another one that's up in the Hannibal-Quincy area that's actually having a first meeting this month. And we have several people who are active members in our chapter who are interested in perhaps starting another chapter in the St. Louis area as well. So we are definitely on the
news. Awesome. Wow,
yeah,
that's awesome news.
Yeah.
And is there one in Kansas City?
Yes, there is a large active chapter, at least one that I know of in Kansas City, yes.
Okay, great.
And I wanted to say that my experience was much like yours, that when we formed our chapter, it was so interesting because the first thing that I did after I filed some paperwork was I went to our local library to inquire about reserving one of their meeting rooms for our first meeting, and the librarian who was working the counter that day told me she would come to our first meeting because her son was gay. So that was kind of a cool coincidence. And then we chatted, and she told me that her mother at the time was a reporter for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch for the St. Charles edition, and she would put me in touch with her so that we could get some press coverage about our first meeting. So that was very exciting, and that happened.
Wow.
And we had a nice article and a photo that ran in our newspaper. And at the time, you know, it was kind of a risk. It was kind of scary because St. Charles County does have a reputation as being a bit more conservative than the St. Louis area, and nothing like this really had ever happened out here in this county. So at the time, I was a public school teacher. I've since retired, but I was teaching and living in my in the attendance area at my local elementary school. So And my children went to that school. So I didn't know what kind of reaction was going to ensue after I started this chapter. So, and it came out in a big way with a big showy article and full-color picture on the front page of the newspaper. But,
wow,
you know, honestly,
good for you.
I know. We didn't know if we would have firebombs crashing through our bay window or, vandalism or anything like that. But I have to say, I'm so thrilled to say this, that we have had nothing but positive response in all of the years ever since that very first risk that we took. When I walked into my classroom that very first day, the day that article hit, which happened to be on Halloween, my room mothers were there setting up for the Halloween party, and I was greeted with a big warm hug from my head room mother. She told me that her best friend is a gay man living in this county, and when he saw that article and recognized my name as her child's teacher, he called her and was so excited and asked her to give me a big hug and thank me for doing this. So, and really, everything that happened since then has been positive. The school I taught in has about 1,000 students and about 100 staff. And in the couple of weeks that passed after that first article, I probably had 15 to 20 people come out to me, teachers, staff, other parents, people who were either LGBT themselves or had a loved one who was. And these are people that I've worked with in some cases for 20 years at that point and never knew. I never knew that, somebody's sister was gay or somebody's nephew was gay or anything like that, because it's just a topic that a lot of people don't talk about. But once we start talking and once people start coming out, then what you say is true. Everybody knows somebody or is related to somebody who's LGBT. Even if you don't know it, I can assure you, you are. So we need to encourage people to feel safe, to come out and make it known, because once you know somebody and care about somebody and love somebody, and then you find this out about them, it completely can change your attitude. And that's what really affects change, no doubt
about
it.
Wow, that is just such a great story. So talk to me a little bit about the community college in St. Charles County, how you're working with them, and what kind of groups they have on campus for kids that are GLBT.
Well, we used to meet at a different venue. We always look for places that are welcoming and free of charge to have our meetings, and we've had to change our locations over the years when, for various reasons, but all positive reasons, when, buildings were under reconstruction and that kind of thing. But a father came to our meetings several years ago, and at the time his son was a student at the community college. And this father was helped so greatly by PFLAG, as nearly every parent always is. And we really helped him tremendously. And at one of the meetings, he brought his son along, and his son is just an engaging, wonderful young man. And he has now moved on to a four-year university, but still has ties with the community college. So we ended up meeting on the campus because we needed a place to go. And their policy is that if you're a nonprofit group, you can meet there as long as you have somebody who's on staff at the community college as your sponsor. So this young man was very happy to be our sponsor, and he still is. So that's why we're able to meet on the campus of the community college. So, and they have a wonderful group there. It's called SAGE, which stands for Straights and Gays for Equality. And it's a great, thriving student group that has done some wonderful things over the years. A few years ago, they brought Judy Shepherd in. She's the mother of Matthew Shepherd, the young man who was murdered in Wyoming many years ago for being gay. She has been there, and they've had just other wonderful speakers and events there. They had the fag bug, that decorated Volkswagen bug car there a couple of summers ago that was traveling the country to bring awareness. And the next event that's coming up is going to celebrate our 100th chapter meeting in St. Charles, which is coming up on April 22nd. We meet on the fourth Tuesday evening of every month at 7 o'clock on the campus. So on Tuesday, April 22nd at 7 p.m., we're going to have a special presentation all about anti-bullying efforts at the elementary school level. Because, so often we hear about students that are in high school or even college who are bullied, and so much attention has been shown on that issue. But really, attitudes are formed in people at a much younger age. So this event is really aimed toward people who work with or have children of their own who are the elementary school age. It's going to be a wonderful event. So we're really happy and excited to partner with the local community
college. Well, and congratulations on your 100th meeting. You've really have done so much to change attitudes and open minds. And more, so much more to be done here in St. Charles County and across the country. I want to make sure people listening know to go to the national website, which is PFLAG.org. They do have a feature that you can search for the chapter nearest to you. You can also see their corporate partners. There's some major companies like Wells Fargo and UPS and Marriott, Johnson & Johnson and MetLife and GM, even Major League Baseball. I mean, there are some major sponsors sponsoring the work of PFLAG, which is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I actually used to raise money for PFLAG back in 1995, I guess it was. And at that time, Cher was getting involved. Ellen DeGeneres' mother was getting involved. Mm-hmm. And so many moms, high-profile moms getting involved at the national level really helped change public perceptions. And I know just even the TV show, Ellen, there have been so many people that have told me, I watch Ellen, I love Ellen. And it's sort of like their way of saying, wink, wink, you know, I'm sort of hip and I support gay and lesbian people. And, you know, it's so important for people in the media and as teachers, as you said, and just on the very, very personal local level to come out in their church groups, in their various social community groups as a family member or a loved one or a straight ally. But also on that national website are all kinds of press releases and ways to take action and to have a role in advocacy, because it's only going to take people standing up and sharing their personal feelings about whether it's safe schools or workplace fairness for things to change. But let's talk a little bit about safe schools. So what's happening here in Missouri around the Safe School initiative?
Well, I know that lots of local area guidance counselors are much more enlightened than they have ever been before. There are that It Gets Better campaign was a tremendous boost. If you just, you know, look around social media, you can see that young people everywhere are much more intolerant of bullying. So that's been a great advancement. I know every year I send a letter, a snail mail letter in the U.S. mail to every guidance counselor in our county to remind them that we're here, so that if they have students or parents who are reaching out for support in the coming school year, they can find us. All of the local mental health care providing agencies and private counselors and, you know, et cetera, know about PFLAG. In fact, that's probably where we get most of our referrals, and I'm always doing whatever I can to make us known, you know, to that community. It's you know, it's an ongoing effort, and it's just about awareness, really, more than anything else. So we're just doing everything that we can. We launched a chapter of the Growing American Youth, that youth group that I referred to earlier, in St. Charles a few years ago. Yeah, I'm so proud of that. Just this past Tuesday, we had our semi-annual get-together between our PFLAG chapter and the Growing American Youth chapter, and we had 42 people show up at the local Youth in Need building where they meet every Tuesday, and we had a wonderful panel discussion and a great conversation just about what support looks like to the youth and to the adults and what we need from one another in order to continue moving forward. And there's been other great advancements, too, in this county. There's an adult LGBT potluck that meets every month that has grown so large that sometimes they have to split into two groups because it's just too many people to fit in one home. There used to be, I'm not sure if there still is, but there used to be a lesbian book discussion group that was meeting on a regular basis. You know, so we're really trying to make an effort out to really just put this issue in the spotlight because it really is about awareness.
Talk a little bit about GLSEN, and do you work with GLSEN here in St. Charles County, and just what GLSEN is, because some listeners may not have ever heard of that organization.
GLSEN is the Gay and Lesbian Education Network, and, you know, I'm on their email list, and I read their articles and things like that, but I don't know of anyone in our county who actively works for GLSEN. I know there used to be a person named Dennis Nicely who moved out of the area. He and I had worked together on some projects a few years ago. I know we had visited some of the graduate classes in the social work department at Webster University and shared some information with them. But I know that they do really great work, too, just with education.
Well, I do want to make sure people know that acronym, GLSEN.org. Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network. It's made up a lot with teachers and educators to, again, make help promote safe schools. And they did today, actually, ironically, I just think this was sort of a God thing, that today is GLSEN's Day of Silence. And
right.
They have hundreds of thousands of students across the country, and I think almost 8,000 schools are participating in this Day of Silence to raise awareness about the pervasiveness of anti-LGBT name-calling, bullying, and harassment in schools. And I see on the line that we have our other guest joining us from HRC. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking with Jill Aull and a staff representative from the Human Rights Campaign out of Washington, D.C. We're going to be continuing our conversation about safe schools, about supporting our gay and lesbian friends and family members, and what you can do as an individual to support someone you love. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Stay with us.
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki-infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, A Comprehensive Guide of Rocks, Crystals, and Stones for the New Age. Visit ggmradio.com and click Bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com. You're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser on GGM Radio. And now, back to the show.
Hi, this is Keisha.
Hi, Keisha. This is Jill. I don't know where Brenda is. I don't know if this is on the air or not.
Oh, okay.
Just hold on. There may be some technical difficulty.
Okay. Sorry. I muted myself out by accident when we went to break. So welcome, Keisha. Thanks for being on the air. Welcome to Alive to Thrive. We were just sharing that you are the Director of Education and Community Engagement for Welcoming Schools for HRC. And that's the Human Rights Campaign. So tell us a little bit about your position, what it is you do around the country.
All right. Well, thank you for allowing me to be on your show. I'm so excited, and I'm excited about being in Missouri next week after next, so everything is moving in place. So as Director of Education and Community Engagement, I'm responsible for training educators on creating and maintaining school climates that embrace family diversity, that ends bullying and name-calling, and also stops all forms of gender stereotyping. So, you know, we have a staff of consultants and full-time staff of 11 across the country, and we've been in hundreds of schools, and, you know, we're just trying to do all that we possibly can to help educators be better so that they can help students to be their best.
Wow. Now, how long has HRC had this position or department? Because I was there in 1993 as an event manager, and I guess it was 94, 95. I was the director of events, and I have 13 different cities I worked with. But how long have they had this position?
Welcoming Schools has been a program of the Human Rights Campaign Foundation for the last 9 years. So
wow.
Left just when it was starting to be born.
Wow, okay. So just when the Peace Light chapter started here in St. Charles County, Missouri, your position was getting started. And how did you come about working with HRC? Where were you before? What's your background?
Well, I was, prior to coming to the Human Rights Campaign and working with Welcoming Schools, I was a consultant providing support to schools that were going through reconstruction, schools that were having some turnaround schools within various urban areas. And then prior to that, I was a principal in Washington, D.C., and then an assistant principal in various cities, counties within Maryland area.
And wow, then, of course, so you have a strong background in education, and so you've seen firsthand being an educator and being an administrator the effects of bullying in the school setting. Tell us a little bit about some of the things you witnessed firsthand.
Well, I do know that, you know, every school environment wants to do the best that it can to support students and make sure that the climate is conducive so that everybody is thriving. Yet I also know that educators often overlook a great deal. Sometimes people will just accept certain behaviors and say, you know, that's just what happens in school spaces. And so I do know that we have some educators who believe that, yet I also know that we have educators who are pretty much aware and try to create climates in which you know, children understand the importance of being respectful and interacting and speaking to each other in a positive and effective manner. And more than that, being in spaces where adults model appropriate behavior. Because children are always paying attention to what adults do and say. And so that's one of the things that I really try to focus on as a teacher and as an administrator, of a model of modeling appropriate behavior so that students know, no, it's not okay to say inappropriate things. No, it's not okay to, you know, to hit a classmate or to yell at a classmate. You know, and so it's just you see it in so many different places, and it's all about how strong educators feel about their ability to handle certain situations. And so that's one of the things that Welcoming Schools really focuses on, training educators on how to respond when inappropriate things happen, how to help students when they feel as though they're not fitting in into a space, how to support a student in that space. And so that's one of the things that we're
Can you talk a little bit about the correlation between an intolerant atmosphere, say, for example, the Anoka School District in Minnesota, where teachers and administrators were not allowed or didn't think they were allowed to talk to or counsel students who were experiencing hate speech and bullying. Talk about the correlation between an intolerant atmosphere and crime and some pretty serious stuff. Tell us a little bit about that. What you've seen across the country.
You know, I think it's sad when adults feel as though they don't have the ability to stop inappropriateness, you know, whether it's someone saying something about someone's perceived being gay or being gay as well, that it's our responsibility to make sure that we say something. So anytime I hear educators say, well, I don't feel I can say anything, I think that is untrue. I feel that you should be able to create a space that is tolerant, that people understand that the adult is in this space to make sure that all students are thriving. And so I'm still thrown by that when I hear when adults say, well, I can't say anything about LGBT. You don't have to say anything about LGBT in order to create a safe climate. You don't have to. But it's, I think
so.
Think
for those that are listening that don't know what happened in Minnesota, because I was pretty shocked. I had only heard a little bit about it, but I went up there to help on a political campaign the end of October, a year and a half ago. I guess that was in 2012, and it was the school district of Michelle Bachmann where her hateful attitudes carried over and the school district had policies that really put children at risk, and
right.
There was this high suicide rate, like 9 suicides in the scope of 12 or 18 months or something.
Yeah.
How has that kind of situation, which got national attention, actually in the long run helped open up the discussion about what happened there, like how that shouldn't be repeated?
Well, I will tell you, because it went to the on a federal level of investigation, it did have that school district have to put a plan in place of how they're going to support LGBT students and to make sure that these incidents don't occur at that rate again. And so because of the negative aspect of it, you're right, something wonderful did come out. It did require the school district first to take responsibility and to make sure that their staff was trained and to provide support to students. And so I know that, you know, with that plan, they've had a great deal of training. It is ongoing, and they're being monitored. And I know we had some welcoming school staff who provided support to some schools within that school district, you know, after everything, you know, with their mandate was given to them in order to provide support to all staff and to make sure that they're getting the necessary professional development so they could be stronger in supporting all students. So that's the beauty of something that came out of that started in such a negative way. Is that it
right,
make-
and I love that. Sometimes there is a blessing out of a tragedy. So tell us about the other hot spots. Are there troubled parts of the country or the South or certain states that you are looking at or trying to work more closely with?
Well, Brenda, we are all over. We know that in intolerance, violence, negative behaviors towards perceived LGBT people and LGBT people are all across the country. So there are no safe zones. So we go wherever people call us to come to. So we really, you know, we really don't have, oh, we must go in this particular space because we know this is happening. We try to be wherever people need for us to be. So when we get a call, we do all we can to support that community.
Wow. So how did you connect with Jill and coming here with this PFLAG program? This is fantastic that HRC is bringing someone into Missouri. It is a swing state, too, politically for many reasons, but how did you two connect?
You know, we connected through steering committee members, HRC steering committee members, who are very active in Missouri. And, you know, it's always wonderful for HRC to have the opportunity to show our work, to let people know the work that we're doing within, you know, to create safe school spaces and to train educators. So we're excited to show our film, What Can We Do, focusing on bias-based bullying and from a child's perspective, elementary school students. And so we're excited about the opportunity to show this film on the 22nd. So we're looking forward to it.
Yeah,
so you're actually showing
to...
a movie? Tell us a little bit about that,
so
what the program
film,
will be.
I can tell you about the film, and then I'll let you go into more specifics. So what our
okay.
film, what can we do? It focuses on the welcoming school approach of giving students the opportunity to talk about how they feel about various issues that happen in the school space. So we talk about students who are picked on because of their size, because of being perceived to be gay, because of their skin color. And it's all from a youth voice. You know, so we have first through sixth graders, stating how, you know, things, how people are treating them in a school space, how what spaces that they're feeling safe in. And then you have teachers talking about the importance of teaching students how to be upstanders, how to be allies. And that's what this 15-minute powerful film focuses on, getting adults to hear the voices of young people and hoping that that motivates them to create spaces in which they're showing young people the importance of being upstanders and allies.
And Jill, specifics, how do people get tickets or reserve, or do they just show up?
Well, I wanted to say that it was such a cool coincidence because one of the other hats I wear is as the volunteer coordinator at St. Louis's LGBT Center, and one of the volunteers there also serves on the HRC steering committee. So he contacted me as the PFLAG president and asked if we might be interested in hosting Keisha. And I said, well, you know, in a perfect world, she would come in April because that happens to be our 100th meeting month. And as it worked out, thankfully, she was available for that particular date. So it just was kind of cool the way the stars all lined up for us. The event is free and open to the public. It's going to be held in the auditorium in the Social Sciences Building on the campus of St. Charles Community College. No matter which entrance you use to enter the campus, there are signs everywhere just pointing you to the Social Sciences Building. SSB is the way it's abbreviated. It's the only auditorium on the campus, so just find that auditorium. It starts at 7 p.m. It's free. It's open to the public. It has been publicized among the staff and teachers and guidance counselors in all of the elementary school buildings in our county. All the school districts have taken the flyer and passed it on to their staff, so we're excited about that. The capacity there is 150 people, so we're hoping it's standing room only. There's no need to make any kind of reservation or anything, but it's a big parking lot, so I would encourage people to give themselves time to park and find their way into the building because it's pretty big. But
that is a beautiful auditorium. I have done events in that room. The screen is huge, it's just an absolutely beautiful building. Speaking of that particular college campus and just things that are happening around the country, they did a play called Gertrude Stein and Her Companion, and it was kind of just shocking to me to see that play and realize that Ernest Hemingway never acknowledged Gertrude Stein's partner by her name and only called her companion. And just that, it's just amazing to me that actually happened, and then they made a story and a play about it. But the students were really excited to be performing that, and as you said, they have done some wonderful things at that campus. But I wanted to ask Keisha a question about teachers coming out. I remember when I was growing up in the 80s, there was a lot of discussion around gay teachers, and Anita Bryant was making her little fuss. What's it like now, and are there still places where teachers who come out have challenges?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it is still very challenging. It's, it's all about, what school community you're in. When I speak to educators and they ask, should they disclose their sexual orientation, I said it all depends. It depends on if you're going to be in a space that is going to support your being. Are you going to be safe? Are you going to be able to navigate in that space where you're more than just your or the gay assistant principal? I know in the work that I do, it's often very challenging for LGBT school leaders to have welcoming schools come into their spaces because they don't want to be perceived as focusing on some type of special agenda. As an educator, as an administrator, I was not someone who was out, who shared, who disclosed in those spaces. It just was not. I didn't feel a safe space for me at the time, but I know a lot of educators who are thriving in certain spaces. And so it's all about finding the school community that is extremely inclusive and more than words but in action. So it's still about, doing your research and making sure you're putting yourself in a space that is going to help you be your best. And so it's still that challenge. We still have educators who are losing their positions because they're LGBT. That's still happening. And it's not just in Catholic spaces, in Catholic school spaces, and, you know, it's in religious school spaces. It's happening in public schools. It's just they won't say that's the reason why you're losing your position. It'd be for, you know, they'll focus on, let me focus on policy and practice.
Unfortunately, in our state, it is legal to do that, and it is legal to say this is why you're losing your position, sadly.
Yeah, it's very sad.
Yeah.
So
I want to direct people to hrc.org/issues/youth-campus. There's actually a whole page on youth and campus issues. They're actually requesting stories. If you have a story, you can share it there on the website. And they have the whole Welcoming School campaign where you can learn more and participate. And they have some resources for people who are coming out and how to navigate that and growing up LGBT in America. So, Keisha, tell us a little bit about the resources HRC offers specifically for individuals and then for schools.
Well, you know, you did a great job of directing people to the Human Rights Campaign's website. We have so many resources. We have the guides about coming out. We have lesson plans on the Welcoming School site. We have, you know, strategies and tips that educators, families can use in making sure that their children, their families are in inclusive school spaces. You know, we just have a host of resources, and we truly want people to take advantage of it. That's one of the beauties of working with HRC. We have just a multitude of resources, and we want people to take advantage of them. And just visit the website, you know.
And I'm sure also there's a Twitter account and just
Twitter,
utilizing
Facebook,
all of – is there a YouTube channel?
Yes, we do.
So there is a YouTube channel, too, on HRC, but one of the latest news that I just am so excited about just came out this week was Governor Dayton in Minnesota signing an anti-bullying bill into law, and Minnesota has done so much, my goodness, in the last couple of years from when I was there the fall of 2012 to pushing back an anti-gay marriage bill and then passing same-sex marriage 6 months later, and now this anti-bullying bill becoming law. Can you talk a little bit about that, Keisha? Were you involved at all with the Minnesota effort?
Well, I mean, I'm laughing inside because, Brenda, we're having our inaugural Welcoming School Bill of Excellence in Minnesota on May the 2nd. We're going to be honoring.
Okay, can you get closer to the microphone, the telephone and repeat that? We lost you a little bit.
So on May the 2nd, we're going to be in Minnesota in St. Paul honoring 11 schools and districts nationwide in our inaugural Welcoming School Seal of Excellence event. And
I just want to repeat that. On May 2nd, you will be in St. Paul, Minnesota, honoring 11 schools who have done what?
Who have just thrived in using Welcoming School in their school spaces to create a space in which bias is being, any form of anti-bias is being addressed immediately. And you know,
now, are these high schools only or elementary and high school?
These some of them are K-8. There are no high schools this year. But we have some K-8 schools, and these are schools from across the country that are going to be in Minnesota. So we have
and
schools.
And where is that event taking place exactly?
You know what? It's going to be at J.J. Hill Elementary School in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Okay, so it's actually being held at a school. That's very neat. So.
Yes.
So Minnesota is doing a lot of great things, and it just goes to show you that when a community wakes up to, you know, how they can get involved and they're empowered and they get the training they need at the grassroots level and work with groups like PFLAG and other groups, that big change can happen in a short amount of time. And I think the use of social media has really played a role with, you know, issues are moving faster than what I can remember. It seemed to take forever to get social justice and programs moving, but now it seems people are sharing information, and we do want to encourage people to share information about this program. It is archived, so as soon as we're done, you know, taping live, the link is still shareable. So, you know, share it on social media because people, we find with Blog Talk Radio shows particularly, we get more listens after we air. So it's that viral effect of people sharing the link on Facebook and Twitter that people will go on there and listen. And, you know, we can all be educating. You know, those of us that work within the community on these issues all the time, we take for granted that, you know, a lot of people know this stuff because we're surrounded by people that, but we're actually more in the minority. And so we can, just this is directed more for our listeners to really share the link of the program and the links of HRC.org and PFLAG.org. So, Jill, what else would you like to see in the future working with PFLAG in terms of how to empower your local PFLAG chapter?
Well, I'll tell you, it's all about visibility and just getting the word out there because, you know, depending on which statistics you look at, about 10% of the population is LGBT. So if that's the case, then really we should have lots of PFLAG chapters in every community. People should be clamoring to bust down the doors. I know that a lot of people aren't joiners, and a lot of people feel like they're so accepting that if their child comes out, it's not a real big deal to them. But I would say to those people, you need to come to PFLAG meetings as well so that you can offer support, even if you don't feel that you're in the position where you need any. So, and we welcome LGBT people themselves to come to our meetings. It's so gratifying when you have for example, a 40-some-year-old gay man who is in a solid relationship, perhaps raising children, in a rewarding career, living a successful life. And then you have perhaps a woman who comes in whose teenager just came out to her, and she's devastated because she doesn't think that she'll ever have grandchildren or her child will never be able to marry or her child is doomed to die of AIDS. You know, it's so helpful to look across the table and see, oh, it's really going to be okay. My child is definitely going to be able to live a satisfying, fulfilling, happy, healthy life and be gay at the same time. So that's, you know, that's something that we're always striving for, to just let people know that we're out here, that we welcome anybody. We're a completely anonymous group. It's totally confidential. We don't charge anything. You know, it's just, it's really a safe place for people to just come and share their feelings. It's incredibly gratifying to see people who will come to a meeting in tears, and month after month they continue coming back, and the next thing you know, they're smiling and laughing and they're relaxed and they're ready to take that next step to become an advocate for their child or for their loved one. We joke because when we formed our chapter, my husband and I were not devastated at the news that we had a gay child, but we were just interested in networking with others just to answer some of those questions that popped up and just not to feel so alone. And I remember saying at our very first meeting that I was not interested in becoming, you know, in marching in any parades or anything like that. I just wanted to get together once a month with other parents of gay people. And it's just so funny because in a very short time, I became probably one of the most active LGBT advocates in the area. I retired from my job, and I am more than a full-time volunteer for several LGBT organizations, and almost every day of the week, I'm attending meetings or some kind of event or something, you know, to promote the cause of LGBT equality. I've been at every Pride Parade since that initial one, and, you know, so it's really, I feel like I'm really beating the drum in our county, and I'm really excited.
You have done so much, Jill, and it shows how much one person can do, and if everybody just stepped out and did a little bit in their own local community, the big change we can get. So with Pride events coming up in a couple of months in June across the country, what kind of role does PFLAG have at Pride events, and how can people, learn more or support you guys at Pride events coming up in June?
Well, sure. We have a booth at every Pride Festival, and for the second year in a row, we'll be based downtown in downtown St. Louis, which is really an exciting thing. It's the weekend of June 28th and 29th. We'll be tabling at our booth all day, both days. We'll be participating, as we always do, in the parade on the 29th. It starts at 11 a.m., I believe. And, you know, of course, we always appreciate donations, but really we just want folks to stop by the booth, take a brochure, ask questions, and, just find out where we are. I can't tell you how many young people over the years have approached me at the Pride Festival, people I don't even know, who thank me for being a PFLAG mom and tell me how much they wish their parents were PFLAG parents. So, again, it's just about visibility and getting the word out there that we're here and that we're our arms are wide open, and we are completely welcoming to anybody who needs to give or receive support.
Fantastic. And Keisha, how can people support HRC and help move the issue forward as far as working with schools and supporting your work? How can people support your work?
They can support our work by first getting on the website, getting more information about welcoming schools, and just share it with a colleague who works in a school space. That's what we really need. We need people just putting the word out about welcoming schools and, you know, signing up on the website, going directly to www.welcomingschools.org and signing up so that you get our newsletter, you know what we're doing within the communities. And, you know, just as I said, let people know. Share the information.
All right. Very good. And just, you know, wherever you are in the country, get involved. Look for local events that are happening. I just noticed online on Facebook there's an event tonight that our statewide organization Promo is doing. It's a kickoff party for their workplace advocates, and they're getting more active in creating awareness around creating safe and equitable workplaces and for getting businesses to sign on for that. So another important issue. Thank you, everyone, for participating in our conversation today. And if you're listening and you love someone who's gay or lesbian or you're friends with, you know someone in your life, please let your state legislator know. Please support them publicly. And, don't just have that support quiet to yourself. Use your voice to make change. Because if everyone spoke up that loved someone that is gay or lesbian or transgender or what have you, we could really just change the world one voice at a time. So thank you, everyone. We'll be back next week on Alive to Thrive. We'll be talking with David Guntz, who's running the Boston Marathon a year later after the bombing. He was there. He finished the race 30 minutes after the bombing that took place last year in Boston, and he's a family man and running again. So next week, tune in to Alive to Thrive. Thank you, everyone. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks.
See you guys. Bye-bye. We're going to end with a song again from Isara Tuwalo, Alone in the Trenches.
Yeah, yeah. I've always been everything other than who I am. I don't wanna lie and live another day in this disguise. I wanna risk it all to be true. Would you break my fall if I come?
think of ways to make your home. With no use to cry, all my fears and all my tears have passed me by.